My name is Jackie Weissman. I'm 49 years old. Today's date is January 19th, and I'm speaking with my father, Cy Weissman, and we are recording this interview in Huntington, New York. My dad is turning 80 in 2 days, and so I wanted to interview him before he turns 80. So here we go. To start, please share your name, age, and why where we are recording today.
My name is Cy Weissman, and we're sitting in my office, in my home. I have an office connected to my home, at 31 Polly Drive in Huntington, New York. I've been living here since 1992. So that's where we are now.
Okay.
The date is January 19th, 2020.
What is your best memory of your childhood?
Best memory of my childhood is, I have a number of memories, but my best one is I was about 5 years old, and my Uncle Al, who was in the Army, was getting married to his fiancée, Mildred, I forget her maiden name, but they got married in Rabbi Gordon's study, which was a house. Rabbi Gordon lived on our block on Van Buren Street in the Bedford-Stuyvesant section of Brooklyn. And this was August. It was probably 1944, so maybe I was 4 years old, because he was still in the Army. I thought it was August 1945, but that's the end of the war, you know. So probably I was four. And I'm standing in the living room next to my parents, and I have on my first suit, which was a short pants suit, probably gray in color. I think it was gray in color. And I had a short sleeve white shirt and a tie. I don't remember the color of the tie. I think it might have been a striped blue tie, though, you know, now that I think about it. And I'm standing there, and Rabbi Gordon is in front, and my Uncle Al, in his Army uniform, is on my left, and my Aunt Mildred, who looked like a World War II stereotypical bride with page boy, you know, folded sort of long hair, and I think it was a yellow dress, and she looked beautiful. I remember I thought she was the prettiest woman I had ever seen. I was 4 years old. But turns out she was pretty, you know, as she grew older. So, and I'm standing there, and it's hot as hell. It's August, and there's no air conditioning. This is 1944, you know. And so I say in a loud sort of stage whisper, you know, I don't want to say it too loud, but I say, I'm sweating. And my mother gives me an elbow to shut up. And I repeat, I'm sweating. And many years later, when we were adults, my Uncle Al said, he had heard me say, I'm sweating.
And how did that make you feel?
That's my earliest memory.
How did that make you feel when he said that he heard you?
It made me feel great, you know, because I thought it was so funny that I said, I'm sweating. And the way I said it, I didn't say I'm sweating. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm sweating, which is sort of like an idiomatic, Brooklynized, you know, version of my speech, which I have, you know, I still talk like that. As you can tell, I'm not from London, England. I, you know, my, I have a Brooklyn accent, which I'm very proud of, by the way. I remember I worked in Connecticut, and there was a woman at this research lab that I worked at who was from Boston, who had a thick Boston accent. You know, I can't even, and she kept saying to me, Cy, you have such a Brooklyn accent, you know, in a derogatory way. And I said, well, what the hell is your accent? Isn't that an accent? So she should say, what are you talking about in a Boston accent, you know, which I can't mimic at all, you know. But so anyhow.
What do you feel most grateful for in your life?
Oh, I feel grateful for a number of things. Number one, I think, there's a number of things, but I'll just give you the earliest ones first in chronological order. So When I went to the University of Massachusetts and I was in a PhD program, and I completed my PhD in May 31st, 1970. I say that because that's when graduation was. And I said to myself, if I ever get my PhD, I am going to the graduation ceremony with bells on. Everybody else who got a PhD, they didn't go. You know, they thought it was sort of plebeian beneath them. Well, I went. As it so happens, my wife, my first wife, Carol, was 9 months pregnant at the time. And as I'm walking down the aisle, and by the way, when I walked down the aisle, a lot of these undergraduates who saw me walking down the aisle said, "Dustin Hoffman!" They kept pointing at me that I looked like Dustin Hoffman. I couldn't believe it. Anyhow, I expected over the loudspeaker for them to say, "Dr. Weissman, your wife is giving birth, it's an emergency. But she didn't give birth. But she did give birth the next morning. At 1:30 in the morning, I drove her to Florence, Massachusetts, which is near Northampton, and Painless Pete Merzbach, the doctor, delivered a child named Jackie Lee Weissman. And seeing Jackie Lee Weissman, they showed her through the window, was one of the most exciting things in my life. I don't know which one was more exciting, probably that rather than the PhD, although the PhD was more exciting. But then later on, when I divorced Carol Weissman and I married Phyllis Kozak, we couldn't naturally have a child. We tried, but so we decided to adopt. So the first child was Scott, and we adopted him from Paraguay, and it was very exciting. It was very exciting. We had to live in Paraguay, Asuncion, Paraguay, for a month before we could adopt him. But it was very exciting to get him from the orphanage and to be with him for a month and then to take him home. And then 6 years later, we adopted another child, Julie Isabella Weissman, from Guatemala. But in Guatemala, we only stayed for 3 days. But it was very exciting to see when they handed us the child. And I remember the first night having Julie, she didn't sleep too well. When they gave it, she was about 5 months old, 6 months old. So Phyllis and I took turns of sleeping and caring for her in this place where the doctor who took her in was. Anyhow, but we took her home from Guatemala, and now we have two children, Scott and Julie, and I have another one who I mentioned to you, Jackie, who is much older, you know. Okay, so those were my most exciting memories.
If you could hold on to one memory from your life forever, what would it be?
If I could hold on to one memory my whole life, I don't know. I guess being with my parents. I miss my parents. And, I was there when they got sick, and it was very sad, and I didn't want them to die, but they died a month apart. So if I could hold on to one memory, it would be the memory of my parents when they were younger. And we would do things together. We would go to the Catskills every summer, and we would just be home. And I was raised in this, three-story brownstone in Brooklyn. And being there with them, and my grandfather lived with us. And in fact, my Uncle Charlie and my Uncle Al even lived with us for a while they were single. That was a great memory growing up. I had a very, very pleasant, very nice upbringing.
Can you share a story about that?
A story about it? Well, my story was, one story. First of all, I have an older brother, Marty, who I am very close to. We're probably best friends, you know. My story was that my brother, the first story was that when I was very young, I would go to the synagogue with my grandfather. I remember him taking me to the synagogue, and probably he took me to the synagogue because my mother said, "Take Seymour, babysit." So So he would take me to the synagogue, because he was an Orthodox Jew, and he would daven, you know, in the synagogue. He would put me in the back. I would play in the back. And then, you know, after a couple of hours, he would take me home. I would take my nap or whatever the hell I did. And he would take a nap. But before he took a nap, my mother would always have waiting for him a glass that I thought was tea, but it was 3/4 vodka and some tea. And he would drink that and then take a nap. And then he would go back to the synagogue in the afternoon. I don't think I went with him in the afternoon. But one of my earliest memories was with my older brother, Marty. Because he always hated me for being close to him and his friends. He didn't want his little kid brother, you know, he was embarrassed by me or whatever. But I stayed close to him. So one time he said to me, if you don't leave us alone, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to really beat the shit out of you, you know. And he meant it. So when he threatened me, I ran. And he ran after me. And I ran. I had about a half a block leave or so. And I ran into this my house at 114 Van Buren Street. And on the first floor, we had these ceiling-to-floor drapes, these huge, heavy. Now, when you think back to them, they're disgusting. But they were part of the style of that era. And I just hid behind one of the drapes. I remember my mother was in the distance in the dining room reading the newspaper, not saying a word. My brother came storming into the house, banging the door, went upstairs. We had tenants, George and Sophie Bass, and he went looking in their apartment for me. Didn't find me, came to the second floor, looked in all the closets, the doors, came down to the third floor, looked around. My mother didn't say a word, and I thank God my mother didn't say a word. And he looked behind the other drape, but not the drape I was hiding behind, and I was saved. So that is a very early memory.
What are some of the most important lessons that you've learned in your life?
Oh, okay. One of the most important lessons I've learned is to, for want of a better way of saying it, to thy own self be true. Be yourself. It took me a while to realize that I have to be myself. I can't be anybody else. And I realized this very well, or I started to realize it, when I started. I had a number of jobs in psychology, experimental research, and I wanted to get into the clinical area and found it very difficult to do so because I wasn't trained in the clinical area of psychology. But I managed, because my name was on a civil service list, to get a job at Kings Park Psychiatric Center, which is a huge, disgusting place with 7,000 psychiatric patients. I knew nothing about it. I was scared shit to work there. But you know what? I needed a job. I had left my wife, Carol, and my little daughter, Jackie, in Boston and come to Long Island to test the waters. So I was there. And I learned by the seat of my pants to be a clinician. But I needed to be trained even more. So I weaseled my way into a postdoc program at Adelphi. And it was hard to get into the Adelphi program. But the reason I got in was because someone said, go in for analysis with one of the directors, and they won't be able to say no to you. So I did that. I went into analysis with Don Millman. And after 2 years, I said to Don, I want to apply. He says, well, it's a conflict of interest. But I applied, and the second year I applied, he let me in, even though I was not trained. So I went into this program, this postdoc, very analytic. And at first, I was intimidated by everybody because I knew nothing. I knew nothing. They knew. I just was there by the seat of my pants. It took me about 2 or 3 years and a lot of analysis to realize I'm okay. And I can do therapy, and I can do it just as well as them. But I do it in my own inimitable fashion. In fact, one of my patients now says The reason I like you, Dr. Weissman, is because you're rough around the edges. And I hold that as a badge of honor. I am rough around the edges, but I do a good job. And you know why I do a good job? I am motivated to help people. And I get right there in with them to help them. And I don't take no for an answer. I don't worry about their resistance because if they come to me, I'm going to help them. And that's how I feel. And you know, and I think I've helped a lot of people. It's very difficult. It's not an easy profession. You've got to concentrate for 45 minutes, you know, and focus on them. But I'm doing it in my own – the main thing is I'm doing it in my own way, and I'm feeling good about it. That's it.
Are you still seeing patients now?
Absolutely. I see patients. I see patients. I have on the average about 30 patients, and I see them for 4 days out of the week. My wife and I take off, Phyllis and I take off Friday, so we have a three-day weekend, which is very nice. But I see patients from early morning until the late evening, 4 days a week, and it's fine. It's great.
Okay. How has your life been different than what you have imagined it would be like?
Different? No, I didn't know how. I'll tell you the truth. When I started out, I had no idea, you know, what I was going to do, what I was going to be. I had no support from my parents. They had no college education. My big brother Marty was always in and out of schools, flunking out. I mean, he did very well for himself financially, but he was no role model. I had no role models, none. And so I'm very surprised that I was able to become a psychologist, get a PhD, and prosper, you know, in my field and be good at it, you know. And I'm also very surprised that I paint. I do painting, and I love painting, and it really is a great outlet for me. I put on music, I paint, 3 or 4 hours go, like, in a couple of minutes. It really is great. And then I write. Writing is less so because I'm not into it as much anymore, but I am going to be more into it, so I'm looking forward to that. So that's my deal, and I like my family. I like who's in my family and reaching out to them and being with them, and that's it.
When did you start painting?
I started painting when I had just married my first wife, and she wanted to sign up for a adult education class. So she said, let's sign up for this. I said, nah, I don't want to do that. I mean, why would I want to do that? So we signed up, and they were all women and me, and I was very sort of – and then I saw what the women were painting, and I said, I can do better than this. What they were doing was very flat, and it just – I said, there must be a better way. But I never took lessons other than that, and I just figured it out for myself, that's all. And I continued to learn and figure it out, so that's it.
What are you proudest of in your life?
Oh, I guess I'm proudest of my accomplishments as a psychologist, and I'm proud of my family, who, you know, what my family has become, and you know, when I went into psychology, I knew nothing, and I did very well in various areas of psychology. I was a research psychologist. I published a number of articles in technical journals. I was very, very surprised I was able to do that, but I did that. And I was very surprised that I became a good writer, you know, a technical writer. So I was happy about that, and happy now that I'm a clinical psychologist, happy that I'm a good family man, and I don't want to hurt anybody, and I love people, and I'm an ethical, you know, morally ethical person, and just as an aside, the fact that we have a president who is the opposite of that, who is a narcissistic liar and a cheat, and he is the head of our country, it just beats the shit out of me. And I don't know what to do about it, except I joined the Democratic Party, and I'm not a political guy, but please, God, let somebody be elected in 2020 other than him.
Here. For future generations of your family listening to this years from now, is there any wisdom you'd want to pass on to them, and what would you want them to know?
What would I want them to know? That I always love them, that I love them very much, and I appreciate them with no restrictions. I don't put my own values onto somebody else unless I feel that there's a safety issue from my point of view. Remember, it's all from my point of view. And my daughter is smiling. It's from my point of view, you know. So there you go. But the main thing is everybody should be happy and do their own thing and don't get in their way and help them if they need help, if they ask for help, but don't impose yourself. That's it.
Okay. Thanks for being interviewed today.
You're welcome. My pleasure. And it was fun being with you during the interview.
Exactly. Yeah. It was great. Thanks. All right. Done.